Busy show, wrapping up another busy week on Friday, June 13, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I open the show with my thoughts on the timing of a social media statement posted by Connecticut Democratic U.S. Senator Chris Murphy right after hostilities broke out between Israel and Iran. I thought Senator Murphy just went too far. University of New Haven professor of national security and former State Department official Dr. Howard Stouffer stopped by to chat about the new attacks between Israel and Iran. And former Democratic State Representative Chris Caruso dropped by with his weekly take on the biggest state stories, including, yes, that still controversial housing bill at the state capitol. So at one time or another, I think a lot of us were told by someone, maybe a parent, a significant other, a loved one, boyfriend, girlfriend, domestic partner, a coach, a teacher, in some way, shape, or form, many of us were told, hey, timing is everything, or timing is key in life. It's not necessarily what you do or how you do it or what you say and what you don't say, but everything has to do, or if not everything, a good deal of what you do or say has to do with timing, especially if you're going to say something that people may hear and you go, whoa. Now, saying something like that may be perfectly legitimate, and you may have a wonderful point to say it, but there are people, and I think we all learn at times in our lives, I know I have, where somebody comes up to you and says, well, you weren't wrong, but that was not the time to do it. Or, yeah, you knew you were right, we knew you were right, but you know what? Pump the brakes. You could have waited a little bit, just a bit. What's that other phrase? Discretion is the better part of valor. Doesn't necessarily mean you're wrong. It means that you could wait a little bit, even though you have a right to talk. Now, what am I talking about? Well, like clockwork, our junior Democratic U.S. Senator Chris Murphy posts something on X today. This is his verified account. He posted this actually last night at 10 o'clock. So right around the time, I guess, within a couple of hours, that Israel was attacking Iran. Now, you know Iran. They're a wonderful neighbor. I'm not talking about the Iranian people now. I'm not talking about the good multi-million population of Iran, a lot of whom want to be more westernized and love the West, a lot of whom are not cheering for the destruction of Israel. They don't care, especially the younger Iranians. They just want to live a normal life, where the mullahs aren't telling women that they have to hide their bodies, that they got to wear these burqas and these other rags or whatever it is to treat them like animals. No, I'm talking about the mullahs. I'm talking about the people who spread terror around the world. So, Chris Murphy, now, you may agree with this, but I'm going to read you a statement from Chris Murphy here. And you tell me if he should have just waited. Not that he shouldn't say anything, but you know what I always say about jumping the gun, whether you're in politics, whether you're in the media, whether you're just Joe or Mary Blow at the bar, pontificating on something, wait. There's nothing wrong with waiting. Unless, of course, you have a distorted image of the impact you'll have. Unless, of course, you fancy yourself being elected president in 2028. So now this is the statement put out on X by Chris Murphy, our junior U.S. Senate member, one of seven congressional members here, that represents a state that, despite being a blue state, did have probably a few hundred thousand people that voted for Donald Trump, as did Kamala Harris. She won, though, and has a significant Jewish population in many areas in this state. So rather than wait maybe a day or two, because you do have a responsibility as a member of the U.S. Senate, I'm not saying you can't say it, but again, just to get in front of the news cycle, he says this. Now, you tell me two things we're going to talk about here. Number one, the material substance of his statement, which is an interesting statement. Or number two, should Chris Murphy have just, for the love of God, waited just a little bit? I know what you're saying. Well, if it's if it's on his mind. I get it. I understand it. Or then again, and I say this about Republicans too and everybody else, can you keep your mouth shut just for a little bit until you find out more of the details and nothing is completely rudely conjecture here? So when we come back, I'll give you the couple of paragraphs here from Chris Murphy. I'll let you digest them. And you tell me whether or not, A, you agree with the substance of this. If you do or you don't, that's part of the question here on a Friday. And or B, should he just have waited? Or do Mr. Murphy's presidential aspirations prevent him from doing that? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Should a political of either party just, especially now with this conflict going on between Israel and Iran, is it a good time to just, I don't know, stuff a sock in it for a couple of days? All right, so you'd like to think that our elected officials here from Connecticut, the five members of the House, five Democrats, and the two members of the Senate, Mr. Lieberman and Mr. Murphy, represent maybe the bulk of the thought here in Connecticut. I don't know, but this is, I want to read you this. Take me about a minute or so. This is Chris Murphy's statement here. He posted this on the X platform, and it is timestamped 10:07 last night. So you let me know, A, should he have waited? I think he could have waited a couple of days just to see what proceeds from this. But again, when you're running for president, or at least have dreams about it, I get it. You want to put that out there. But B, what about the material things he says here? Especially, and let me ask you, if you feel some kinship toward Israel or you're a Jewish voter in this state, Mr. Murphy says, quote, Israel's attack on Iran clearly intended to scuttle the Trump administration's negotiations with Iran, risks a regional war that will likely be catastrophic for America, and is further evidence of how little respect world powers, including our own allies, have for President Trump. He continues, quoting again, Iran would not be this close to possessing a nuclear weapon if Trump and Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu had not forced America out of the nuclear agreement with Iran that had brought Europe, Russia, China together behind the U.S. to successfully contain Iran's nuclear ambitions. Again, another sentence here from Chris Murphy. This is a disaster of Trump and Netanyahu's own making, and now the region risks spiraling toward a new deadly conflict. Again, quoting Mr. Murphy, a war between Israel and Iran may be good for Netanyahu's domestic policies, but it will likely be disastrous for both the security of Israel, the U.S., and the rest of the region. Quoting again, as Secretary Rubio stated, the U.S. was not involved in today's strikes, and we have no obligation to follow Israel into a war we did not ask for and will make us less safe. Okay. What are your thoughts on that? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. He says Israel's attack on Iran clearly intended to scuttle the Trump administration's negotiations with Iran, risks a regional war that will be likely catastrophic for America, and is further evidence of how little respect world powers, including our own allies, have for President Trump. So I guess I may ask there, and look, I would expect nothing more, nothing less from Chris Murphy. I get it. He has delusions of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I get it, and that's fine. But Is it the time and the place for a member of Congress? And I would say this about a Republican too, and maybe you agree with this or not, but should members of Congress on either side of the aisle maybe put a sock in it for a couple of days? Does Chris Murphy really think the world needs to hear from him? And you know what makes me laugh? And I say this about isolationists on the Republican side, too. Nobody in the Congress of the United States of America, I don't care if you're a newbie in the House or you've been there forever like Mitch McConnell and the late Dianne Feinstein, whatever, there is no way, no way, shape, or form. It is impossible for any man or woman who works or serves in the U.S. Congress, either the House or the Senate, to possibly understand how the Israeli people feel, or how Jerusalem feels, or how Tel Aviv feels, or how anybody in that area of Israel feels, knowing they have a geographical neighbor not too far away, many of whom who live there will its destruction. And frankly, I've been saying for years and years and years, and trust me, I'm no international expert, but you know what? I think I have a little common sense. Why would you trust Iran with anything? Honestly, can you answer that for me? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. I mean, he didn't say it in that statement, but, oh, my God, Trump and Netanyahu and Iran. We're talking, Senator, with all due respect, sir, we're talking about Iran here. Not the Iranian people, not the Persian people with thousands of years of wonderful history and culture in that part of the world. We're talking about hard right-wing Muslim mullah crazies, right? We're not talking about people that if you get to know, and I knew a gentleman who had family over there, and he used to tell me all the time, he was one of my sources years ago, he said the vast majority of young people in Iran want nothing to do with the craziness over there. But yet, it's like, oh, no, you, and I'm not saying it's easy, but oh, my God, no, you better be, please, you better not upset Iran. Why? Why? You think Chris Murphy feels the same? You think anybody living in Israel right now feels the same way that Chris Murphy does about this? Just on a cavalier basis, being able to fire out this statement he made? And again, he has the freedom to do it. I understand it. But can you sound any more out of touch? Well, we were trying. We were so close. How many years have we been saying we're so close to getting an agreement with Iran? The Iranian mullahs don't want a deal. Does anybody understand that? Hello? Why does a slob like me understand it? No, here's the thing. Even people like Chris Murphy understand it. They don't want to admit it. And maybe, I don't know, you hate to see this. Does it upset Chris Murphy and his ilk that Israel has the balls big enough to do what has to be done? I'm just wondering. Believe me, no international relation expert am I. I've got one coming on later on. Always good to have this gentleman on, longtime contributor here, Dr. Howard Stouffer. He's a professor of national security at the University of New Haven, also a 25-year veteran of the U.S. State Department, served in the Middle East in the 1980s during the Reagan years, also Moscow, Tel Aviv, Beijing, Oslo, and Geneva. Dr. Stouffer, hi, it's Paul again. How are you, sir? Good to have you back. How are you?
Thank you. Good to be on the air again with you.
Well, Dr. Stouffer, I can imagine you're looking at this from far away and chatting about it with people you know and analyzing this. So give us your initial thoughts here of what has transpired over the last day and a half, 2 days. Number one, are you surprised by this or not?
No, I think this is something that's been coming. Bibi Netanyahu has been talking about this for 25 years. He's made references in front of the United Nations General Assembly in 2015, holding up charts about the nuclear program of Iran. But there was an interesting confluence after the attacks by Hamas on October 7th, 2023, and the attacks that Israel did against Hamas and basically neutralizing a lot of them, and then neutralizing with stunning attacks on Hezbollah and wiping out their leadership and their command structure. And then the overthrow of Syria and Assad regime by al-Shara, that basically created an opportunity, especially after these two ranges of attacks in 2024 when Iran attacked Israel and they wiped out their air defense systems. They were in a perfect position to be able to conduct this particular activity or this kind of event. And, of course, they held back while there were negotiations underway between the United States and Iran. But once it became pretty clear that Iran was, he thought, stalling for time, you know, they had a sixth round scheduled for Sunday. He just decided this is it. It's time to go. And particularly, I want to add, the International Nuclear Agency, the IAEA, started noticing that they got denied permission to be able to monitor what was going on in the Taz, where there's the largest amount of, you know, enrichment of uranium to nuclear weapons grade, ore. And that was it. I think that's what they had been planning this for, you know, 8 years. They've been planning specifically since November of 2024. And they had Mossad assets in place inside of Iran, secretly setting up, you know, all kinds of activities that would aid the Israeli strikes. And so they decided to go. They informed the president and they said that they were going, and he didn't say that they should not go. And I think that was it. We're in this situation now. And this is a turning point in the Middle East. This is clearly a turning point.
Well, let me ask you that, dovetailing off of that, Dr. Stouffer. Are the other area countries of the Middle East, are they quietly cheering this, do you think, or not?
Well, I know Jordan has been helping shoot down some of, you know, Israel's under attack now by Iran with ballistic missiles and drones. Jordan's been helping. The UK has been helping. The US has been helping. And the Israelis themselves, you know, their Iron Dome and David Sling are not enough to stop all of these missiles that are being fired. So they're all helping. Each country had a say. The Saudis and the Egyptians all had a say. This is a violation of international law, and it's wrong, blah, blah, blah. But I think, inside their little frameworks, they're all saying, this is great. This is really going to change the Middle East. It will change the Middle East because Iran won't be a threat anymore. Iran had been an ongoing threat for years, spending their billions of oil dollars, you know, for, you know, activities in Lebanon, activities with Hamas, with the Syrians, and then with the, you know, militias that are located in Syria and in Iraq, and the Houthis in Yemen. So they've been out there, you know, fueling all this, you know, terrorism and fire for so many years. And now, you know, they're going to be glad to see that the Iranians are going to be running out of steam. They're going to be seriously put back in their program. And Netanyahu just came on the air, which is unusual on a Friday night.
I saw that. Yeah.
And he said, you know, they don't have any idea what's in store for them. And I think there are even much further attacks are going to be coming very soon, especially at Fordo, which is their underground facility that can be attacked. It can be, and they don't have the 30,000-pound bunker busters, but there are other ways. And I remember when I was in the Middle East, they were talking about what they would do against an underground facility. You bomb all the entrances that provide air, food, and water, and you collapse them, and you keep bombing them until whoever's inside will not be able to function anymore, and then that facility has become inert. So that's the next step.
Yeah, Dr. Howard Stouffer is the guest, of course, from the University of New Haven with a longtime career in the State Department. So, Dr. Stouffer, on a secondary level here, is this also kind of a signal? And we know this has almost happened over the past couple of decades. How much of a push will there be needed for the Iranian people, many of whom are very young because of that Iran-Iraq war, many of whom, and I know from people who have visited there and lived there, they don't like, many of whom, some do, but they don't like the hardline leadership. They want to be friendly with the West. They like America. Right. They want American tourist dollars. Is this another nudge in that direction or not?
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, but the Israelis, you know, they took out last night, they took out the military leadership. They took out the nuclear scientists, the leading nuclear scientists inside of Iran. But they did not go after, to kill the Ayatollah or other members of the political elite in Iran. They could have done that, but then it would have been a different operation. It wouldn't have been an operation to take out their nuclear capability. It would have been, you know, a regime change. It would have been a decapitation for regime change. But this might open up some opportunities, especially the Israelis say this is going to go on for days, and I suspect it's going to go on for weeks. And finally, when they will be satisfied that Iran's capabilities to build a nuclear weapon are so degraded that they can't reconstitute anytime soon, meaning like in a decade or more. And maybe that will be the trigger, like you say, the trigger to, you know, overthrow the regime if that's what people want there.
You had mentioned a couple of seconds ago, Doctor, and I mention this to people all the time. Yeah, the media tells us Iran, Israel, Iran, Israel. But the tentacles of Iran, too, as you mentioned, the Houthis. We hear about U.S. ships and all these merchant marine ships getting attacked by the Houthis. The tentacles of Iran, the Houthis, Hamas, all these groups. I once saw a flowchart on a webpage drawing the connections with all these terrorist organizations, and it all goes the fulcrum of the bicycle wheel is Iran. It always is.
Right. You're absolutely right. And that's why I think Netanyahu decided now's the time is ripe. Hamas is made inert. Hezbollah in Lebanon is inert. There's a regime change in Syria, and the Houthis have been pushed aside. So I think ultimately, this is going to be an opportunity for them to push back directly on Iran, which has been doing this for so many years, using its oil facilities and oil sales to be able to fund all of this. And, it's about time, because nobody else in the region would be willing to do this. Mm. And, and Trump, I think, is going to be supportive. He doesn't want a long-term war. He said he doesn't want to get the U.S. involved in a long-term engagement. But on the other hand, we're helping them. And we made it very clear that any attack on American forces anywhere in the region or elsewhere will be an attack on the United States. And that's the other thing. We need to be vigilant and notice that the Iranians have these, sleeper cells in Europe and the United States, which are terrorist cells. And they may activate them and have them take action against us and the Europeans at some point in the near future.
And finally, Dr. Stolfer, how does this, there are obvious ways, obviously, but how does this shift still the other battle Israel is having with Hamas in Gaza?
Well, I think once they can really, take out the Iranian nuclear capability, it would make it possible for Israel to accept a permanent ceasefire. And I've been hearing this from a number of colleagues who have been working on this issue for many years. And they say that if Israel finally succeeds and is satisfied that it's taken out the nuclear threat from Iran and has set back the Iranians significantly, then they can say, okay, we don't have to worry. If we have a permanent ceasefire, get the hostages back, allow international aid to come in, rebuilding, we don't have to worry about Hamas getting money from the Iranians, because the Iranians are going to be, out of business, basically. And we don't have to worry about the reconstitution of Hamas. So it might actually help a settlement there as well.
From the University of New Haven, always glad to have Dr. Howard Stolfer on to sort this all out. Dr. Stolfer, thank you. You have my number. Don't hesitate to call. Have a good weekend, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Happy Father's Day.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir, and you as well. Dr. Howard Stolfer there, a longtime Reagan-era employee of the U.S. State Department. He has lived in Moscow, Tel Aviv, Beijing, Oslo, Norway, and Geneva, and was involved in nuclear talks. One of the best experts that we have right here on Connecticut Today.
I'll be a little more pointed in my comments. How about that? Senator Sampson has made this comment that he's sort of the king of the last 2 days. Well, I'm going to show him he's not the king of anything, and that when we come into special session, we can still do bills that he blocks. And I take particularly offense when they're blocking bills that pass 150-1. That's not using your discretion and power in a judicious manner. Representative Cantalora never does that. If the Senate passes it 36-0 and his members have no problem, he lets us call that bill on the last day. He filibusters things, true philosophical objections. Stuff was getting killed up there just willy-nilly for no reason. So when we come into special session, we'll send a kind message that when you do that, we have remedies and responses, and they'll be swift and they'll be effective.
Oofa, how about that? Chris Caruso, how are you? Hey, listen, was Matt Ritter channeling his inner Lowell Weicker? What the heck was that about? Wow, your old buddy, your old pal, Chris, Lowell Weicker.
Well, no, exactly right. Yep, exactly right. I liked Lowell, I'll be honest with you. Some people didn't, but frankly, he did a lot for Bridgeport when he was in. And he was thoughtful about the city. So I've always had an affection for him.
Yeah.
Didn't agree on income tax and several of the issues, but as far as person who kept his word for Bridgeport, he did that.
Yeah, but Speaker Ritter there, boy, Chris, a lot of And you've heard me on the show, the finger pointing, not just at the Capitol, but pointing at housing groups and this nonprofit and that. Boy, this housing bill. Chris, in your time up there, before being up there, watching it since then, have you ever seen anything like this with a piece of legislation here?
No, and it seems more and more that I get to learn about Matt Ritter. He has a sharp edge to him.
Mm-hmm.
I served under his father when his father was the Speaker of the House. Different approach to things. It's never good, though, to, you know, kind of threaten people, fellow colleagues. It just never works out. And I think you always have to be careful with that. I just don't think it's a good practice, especially the Speaker of the House. He's in an elevated position within the government, and I think he's got to be careful. If he's going to do something that he's claiming about Senator Sampson, you do that quietly. You know, you don't give the guy the game plan before it starts. You know.
So yeah, and Chris, this bill, this boy, I tell you, the emotions over this. Even the governor saying, Chris, and I'm paraphrasing, saying, well, you know, I should have been more involved, and there's too many numbers here. I get what he's saying, but I also get why. The members of his party, whether the governor's right or wrong, they must be sitting back there with their jaws on the floor.
Well, the truth be told, though, is that the numbers in the House and the Senate were very close. I think 8 more votes in the House could have defeated the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Senate, probably about, 6 or 7?
It was 20 to 15 with one abstention, and the Democrats who voted, Kathy Austin, Heron Gaston, Sujata Gadkar Wilcox, and Joan Hartley voted no.
Yeah, and that's unusual. Joan Hartley, for many times, usually in some cases, votes against the party. She has a constituency that is a little bit more conservative than other cities, even though she represents Waterbury. But for the others, that was really telling. And there had to be issues in the bill that just wouldn't sit well with their constituents. And I think that's the case. So, you know, because the numbers weren't high enough, it's now put the governor in a position where he could veto the bill. And I remember we spoke about that.
Yeah.
Originally, it looked like he was going to vote for it, you know, assign it, I should say, make it law. But then recently, he's been having a change of heart. And I think primarily because he's getting now a lot of pushback from the towns throughout the state. And in particular, I think I think it was Burlington, where both Democratic and Republican leadership of that town in a bipartisan way sent a letter in opposition to 5002. So now the governor's between a rock and a hard place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does he do with his own party? But at the same time, what does he do with the pushback from the various towns and cities throughout the state? He's trying to go halfway on this, in the middle, where he's saying, hey, you know, over the next 2 weeks, he has to veto the bill, I think, by June 30th. Over the next 2 weeks, if the legislature goes in and makes changes to the bill, then he'll sign it. If they don't, then he'll veto it. And that's what that special session's about. The only word of caution is that I really believe the legislature got the attention of every town and city in the state of Connecticut.
Yeah.
I really think they did. So my feeling is don't sign the bill this time, veto it, and then come back in a session, special session, and work through the differences. I believe that many of the towns and cities, if they had an opportunity to sit down and be represented at the discussion at the table, I think they'll make the changes that will work for those cities and towns and for the legislature. But I also don't think it's a good idea to press an issue too far unless you know you have the strength and support to make it go. And the other thing, as I mentioned last week, before I left ended my comments on your program, was that the governor's facing election if he runs again. And don't forget, in the last election, he won. It was a very close race against his Republican opponent. And the small towns and the suburbs actually carried the day for him because the city turnout was low. So he runs the risk if he runs again, and frankly, not just him, but if a Democrat runs, which there will be a Democrat no matter who that is, that's going to be an issue that's going to haunt them. So it may be better veto it, you know, bring everyone to the table and work out the differences, and in special session, pass a bill that works. And I think that's the way to do it. But again, I'm not advising the governor, but I think he is listening.
Yeah.
I think he's thinking of vetoing it. He's in a hard spot right now. But if he vetoes it, the truth is, the party can't override it. You know, there's not
enough votes gap,
in the House.
The gap isn't there. And Chris, you mentioned, and again, I think a lot of people picked up on what you said initially, especially for cities like Bridgeport, the on-street parking issue, which is, you're going to live here and you're going to park four blocks down and you love that coming back at 3 a.m. in the middle of the night. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you've read about pedestrians getting hit, many of them are elderly people. So I could see, let's say they pull up in front of this apartment building on East Main Street.
Yeah.
74 units, six stories high, no parking. And they park on the street, you know, double park to get their groceries out. Some comes by and hits them.
Yeah.
So you're going to see those things. And you're right, at 2, 3 in the morning, who's going to want to walk three blocks to get into your apartment, right? And it's not just because of the city. It could be any community, right? Why would you walk that far and then pay a top dollar for affordable housing?
Yeah.
You know, there's places in Trumbull, for example, from what I heard, is it's like $3,500 a month.
Yeah.
And it's right near the 15. Some units are even higher than that. And it's right near 15. Mm-hmm. But guess what? They have parking.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it attractive. People can go into their apartment units. From what I understand, most of the units have been are rented now.
Yeah.
And it's comfortable living. But you can't have no minimum parking requirement, because developers will come in, and many are coming in from out of state.
Sure.
They'll build the units. They'll save money because they don't have to provide parking. They'll flip the units to another owner. And then that just perpetuates. There's no parking. There's no quality of life. And the other issue is that some towns are close to meeting their requirement for affordable housing, the goal that they have for their town.
830G,
so
yeah.
Why penalize them? You know, I believe that there's a need for affordable housing. Bridgeport has done the lion's share of it within this region.
Yeah.
I'm sure we could do more. However, we shouldn't carry the whole burden. And yet surrounding towns are meeting their goals, too. So, you know, again, that has to be looked at in the overall scheme of things. The other concern, Paul, is you have a glut of affordable housing units. And it's arguable whether they're affordable or not. But let's say you have a glut of that.
Yeah.
What you're going to see is these units being empty, people couldn't afford them because of the rates. And then you're going to have a problem like that existing. So you'll have abandoned units and everything else. So, you know, I think we've got to be careful, because I think many times we say, oh, we need more housing. And for the moment, you may do that. But down the road, the need may not be as demanding as it is today.
Absolutely. Chris Caruso. Chris, always good to hear from you. Have a wonderful weekend, my friend. We'll chat back next week.
And, Paul, could I just be one pitch? Could I?
Sure.
This weekend is the Feast of St. Anthony at St. Margaret Shrine on Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Go to it. If you want an old-fashioned Italian feast, that's the one you go to.
Yeah.
Tremendous food. The parishioners are very involved. If your dad's still alive, take him to the feast. Children should take their dad. It's a great way to spend the weekend and go out and support the church and the community.
Wait, Chris, you said there's going to be food and an Italian feast? Really?
They have the pizza fritta. If my aunt was alive, my grandma, my mother, what you pay today for pizza fritta?
Oh, they'd be going motto on UFA.
I know, but their pizza fritta are large, and it's a tradition for that community. And the sausage and peppers out of this world. It's just a really great festival. Go down and enjoy it.
Excellent. Yep. Chris, take care, my friend. Be good.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, we were running. You hear the commercials for it right here on WICC.